All right, good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing today on the last day of Tech Ed after a long week of hopefully death by PowerPoint, right? A little bit of fun times at night, hopefully not too much fun and you fall asleep on me. We'll try not to do that for you today. So welcome. My name's Heath Aubin. I'm a solution architect within services. You guys probably have heard it as MCS. So my primary focus in MCS is within the identity space. So hopefully you guys are all excited about identity and want to learn about how Microsoft views identity and how we can help you form a strategy moving forward within your environments. So I wanted to take a second just to recap the objectives of what we're really going to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit about some industry trends. I'll try not to throw too many acronyms at you guys. But you guys have probably already heard them today, or heard them before, or for a long time now. And we'll try to demystify those a little bit for you, so you can see how those kind of take to the challenges that you embark on within your identity space. We'll talk a little bit about what we call the four pillars of identity, and how they're going to be useful to you. These are really what we kind of look at as the building blocks. So we'll get into that discussion as well. And this is a topic that I spend a lot of time with customers on and really help them shape their strategy. And then, of course, we'll get into some of the meat and potatoes, which is what do we do in services to help enable you guys to get to some of the realizations that you're looking for. And I'll tell you, that's probably towards the end, and that's where we'll get into a little bit more depth in terms of technology. Up to that point, which is something people find very strange, is I really don't talk a tremendous amount about products. So my goal isn't to sit here and say, we have a product for everything and it's the next best thing since sliced bread. My goal is to help you understand what can be done in that space, and we'll talk about those products at the end. So hopefully you're not disappointed with that, but I think you'll find this very interesting. So let's get a little bit into the meat here. Talk about the trends and some of the importance of identity today. So you guys have seen these trends probably. You're probably living them every day. I mean, we've got all kinds of things like this explosive data growth. I was in a couple sessions with my colleagues yesterday where you're hearing some companies grow their data sizes in terms of multiple terabytes per day, you know, petabytes per month. I mean, this stuff, we have information overload and it's stored somewhere and it takes up disk space. In fact, I think it was IDC who said that they were looking at data growth probably going around the time of 44 times of what it is today over the next probably 4 years by about 2015. So when we have data growth like that, somebody's got to access that data, right? It's just not hanging out doing nothing. And certainly not all of it is anonymous access. We have to secure how folks are going to get access to that data. We also have this proliferation of devices. I like that term, proliferation. I'll use it again a little bit later. But you guys see it every day, right? Everybody wants the next coolest device. They don't want that company-issued laptop because it's old, it's clunky, it weighs a billion pounds, and it seems like lately, at least in the case of my laptop, the power brick is probably heavier than the laptop. It's kind of silly, right? So they go out and buy their own stuff. And sometimes this is stuff that you guys don't even have to... You know, you don't have some management policies, or maybe you can't manage them, or it's extremely expensive to manage, or you just don't let them in. Those devices are an identity in a sense. That's a little different than what we're used to thinking about. When we think about identity, we think about somebody, right? That's a user, somebody logging in. Not anymore, right? It expands out past just that individual to actual devices. Certainly, budget reductions, right? Over the past, you know, several years, probably, what, 4 or 5 years, we've seen just a continual cut in budget. And you guys all know the games, right? Try to spend all your money so that you get the same amount next year, or, you know you're going to get cut by X number of percent, and you got to fight tooth and nail to get every dollar. And I would argue that it's hard to justify what you spend your money on. Right? You've got all these things coming at you. You got cloud this, cloud that. You know, I got to do this, cost saving somewhere. Who, you name it, right? Identity is really at the core of all of those things. Because without identity, what good is all that other stuff? And then certainly we just kind of get into the IT constraints, right? So the IT constraints, really you're talking about running, transforming, what percentage that you can actually do some transformational differences, and then growth. And if you look at that chart, I found it very interesting that the transformation of it is actually a pretty small sliver. I mean, this is where we're starting to do some innovative things. But the rest of it is just keep it running, keep the lights on, right? This falls into that infrastructure tier of it's not cool, it's not sexy, so what are we? We're not investing in that. How's it going to make me money? So we talk about savings money, right? So at the bottom line is everybody's under this pressure, right? Got to do more with less. That's a buzzword you probably heard a billion times, right? Got to do more with less. Hey, get out there. Do something really cool. When it comes to access challenges, this is really kind of where we start to think about, you know, how do we make this happen? How do we enable these devices to connect to our environment securely in a managed way, in a way that doesn't cause us concern that some of the data or potentially access to resources happen in a way in which is disruptive or negative? Availability. How do we keep these things up and running? In fact, how do people get access to what they need, when they need it, faster than they ever thought possible, right? 'Tis the days are gone when you can get a new person in a company and it's okay to say, hey, sometimes in the next 3 weeks, you might have access to what you need. And when you don't, pick up the phone and call somebody and say, I need to look just like John or Jane or whoever over here. Just make me look like them. What does that really mean, right? So we got to have availability not only in our services, but availability in our ability to respond to these requests. We got to get there quicker. We got to get there faster. Yesterday wasn't soon enough. We talk a lot about role and device-driven privileges, right? You've probably heard all these terms, and we'll talk about them a little bit more, but things like role-based access control. Yeah, anybody ever successfully implement an RBAC solution? We got a couple hands in the crowd. All in all, it's a pretty low percentage, and the interesting thing behind that is because it's an extremely challenging and complex situation. How do we map someone from a human resource situation, whatever role they're in, department they're in, whatever the case is, how do we actually map that person to an actual access level permission? Because sometimes these things are narrowly defined. I mean, you guys have probably seen it. Maybe has anybody seen their HR solution where you look at departments or roles or, you know, job title for that matter and go, man, what does this mean? I don't even know. I'm system super engineer level 3 Superman God. What does that mean for access? Well, it must mean I get root access to everything and domain admin access to everything else. So it's tough. And this is actually where about probably, and I don't have an exact percentage, but it's a very large percentage of projects fail is in this particular space. Not only do we have to deal with our own stuff within our enterprise, now all of a sudden we got customers who want to use our stuff, partners who want to use our stuff, public folks who want to use it, citizens, people outside the traditional boundary. And we know what we did for that before, right? When somebody wants to access our stuff, what do you do? Stand up a DMZ AD. Cool. Woohoo. Well, that's kind of expensive to operate, right? Costs a lot of money. We can talk about how many servers there are. You could talk about probably the more important thing is what happens when someone needs to change their password. That's troubling, right? Got to call someone. You know, you can take the dollar amount. It's probably somewhere I hear about 30-some dollars U.S. for every password reset call to the help desk. But the bottom line is you got to provide access to these services. It's no longer just inside the firewall. So basically, we have to facilitate productivity without impacting that company, right? Without impacting security. Let's talk a little bit about the management challenges, right? So we know what access challenges are. You know, management today's challenge, hey, we got to adopt to the cloud. Cloud's the buzzword. We got to get out there to the cloud, put something in the cloud. And what happens when you move something to the cloud? Oh, how are people going to access it? Well, I don't know. It's pretty tough to say. I guess it probably depends. Better yet, if you're moving a line of business application to the cloud, how do you provide identity service today? Will that application provide the same level of services with identity that it did when it was running on premises? Likely not, right? Likely you need to rethink through how that's going to work. And sometimes application redesign is a bit costly, expensive, and probably wasn't thought about originally, right? I think I talked yesterday a little bit in the hybrid discussion that the last thing you want to do is go and say, hey, you spent X number of million of dollars to move to a cloud solution. By the way, I need another 10, 20, 50, 100, whatever the number of millions are, because my infrastructure isn't ready for it. So we've got to adapt to the cloud. We need to have not only rapid onboarding of our user community that we talked about a minute ago, but we have to be able to quickly and efficiently onboard services. How can we get people access to these services, or better yet, how do we have a faster time to market for these services, whether it's cloud-based or whether it's on-premises? And while we're doing that, we need to give access to it, which means we have to have an identity model that is agile. Most identity models today aren't very agile. Mergers and acquisitions, right? The favorite topic, the age-old mantra of, oh my goodness, I just brought someone on board. I need to get them access. This is extremely important because if I don't get them access and we aren't looking like we're working cohesively, then it's a huge failure and the merger doesn't go through well and people are frustrated and upset and for probably a variety of other reasons as well, right? M&A is the age-old thing that goes on. And one of the big challenges in M&A, aside from the business logistical side of it, is how do I get identity services in there? How do I get people to access this stuff? And then you talk about, I don't want to stand this up, or I don't want to set up a trust relationship, which is probably all of a sudden where trust relationships within an Active Directory standpoint became one of the worst things in the world to everybody, and please don't ever do that. I'm not saying that, by the way, but this is what I'm hearing, right? Trust relationships are a bad thing today. I agree and disagree. A little bit depends on the situation. But that's the reality of what we deal with in M&A. And I use the term proliferation again, right? Proliferation of groups and users. You know, how many tens or hundreds of thousands of groups do you have in your Active Directory environment, right? What do? We stand up a service, got to create at least 400 or 500 groups before we can provide access to that service, right? An Active Directory. And I'm not sure which ones we really use, so let's just take the ones that are already there and let's nest them in here. All of a sudden, you start looking at your nestings, and you're thousands of levels deep. And we wonder why we have Kerberos token bloat, right? These things happen. So there's a lot of challenges on how to manage the environment. And we have to really, really, really adapt quickly. All right, a little bit more on challenges here. Security. Why is it last? Not because it's the least important by any means, but because this is kind of the thought process you go through, right, when you're working through these steps. Right? So from a security perspective, we already talked about rapid. I need access now. I don't need access tomorrow. I'm losing productivity because you're fumbling around trying to figure out what groups I need to be in when all I need to do is look like Shirley. Just copy it, man. So security is getting pressure, not only to do things quickly, but to stick to these standards and these GRC requirements that are in place. So if you think of governance, regulatory, and compliance, you know, these are the things that drive the security department crazy. It's like, so you'll say, what are your requirements to meet PCI or HIPAA or whatever government level one you need or EU or whatever the case is? What are your requirements? And I said this before, what happens is you get a book set on your desk, and it's about yay thick, and you read it, and you say, not only am I not a lawyer, I'm a technologist, what does this mean to you guys? And you go, I don't know. I gotta be HIPAA, that's the HIPAA book. And you'll read things like, must have secure communication between endpoints, must have data secure at rest and in transit. It doesn't tell you how to do it. So the security team needs to give access quickly while still trying to meet all these demands and figure out what those requirements are. And that's where we get into protect while extending, right? So you need to be able to protect all this information to meet all these booklets of requirements while saying, I'm getting you quick access, and while I'm extending that service off the traditional world, putting it in a cloud or a private cloud or wherever the case may be, you know, that just really kind of increases the challenges that you have, and how do you keep this stuff secure? So we talk a little bit about centralize and standardize. So today, especially in identity, you got identity everywhere, right? Every application that stands up a service has some sort of an identity store. Maybe it's AD integrated, maybe it's not. Maybe you use AD as your centralized identity repository. Maybe you don't, maybe you have several. So how do you bring these together and centralize them and keep them secure, and all of a sudden start throwing out industry standards like, oh, I don't know, SAML, or one that a lot of people use, right? LDAP, right? We'll talk about LDAP and authentication as a joke, right? You think about that LDAP and authentication, it kind of, right? Okay, bear with me. And probably most importantly is report and audit. Okay, so I need to know who had access to what, when did they have access, where did they have access from, what did they do with it, and was it appropriate for them to do that? Do you guys have, I'm sure you guys have a lot of logging, but who in the room has a solution that truly, if I said, hey, server A and B, I need to know who had access to it from July 1st to July 31st of 2011, tell me who had authorized access and where you had intrusions. Could you go out and run a report and say, here you go? No? That's challenging, right? And I'm not saying this to pick on anybody. This is the challenge we live with because we have this stuff everywhere. How do we do this? But these are the challenges we're faced with. When the auditors come knocking on the doors, you need to be able to provide that. And I'm sure many of you have been involved with this, and I have as well, when that question gets asked. All of a sudden you start going, oh my goodness, I hope I have these on tape somewhere. And you're thinking, if they're Windows servers, I can restore the event log. That's cool. And I can run through and tell you who had access. I don't really know if they're supposed to have access. I can see if they're a member of the group or not. And the auditors have some technical ability, sure. I'm not picking on the auditors. But they'll sit and say, so who was supposed to have access and who was it? I don't know. They got access, so they probably should have. Little red flag, yellow, orange. They want to have probably not the same red colors now. Maybe deep, deep orange, right? That's not as bad as red. But these things are a reality, and these are the challenges we're faced with today. So identity isn't a simple situation. Identity is actually extraordinarily complex when you think about it. So let's talk a little bit about the importance, right? These are the standard things, right, the buzzwords. We want to empower users, right? We want to give users the ability to access the things they need, but only the things they need when they need it. These folks need to be able to get access from anywhere, any device, at any time, right? We're a 24/7 workforce now. The concept of 40 hours a week, I hope it applies to you. Unfortunately, it doesn't to me. I need access to stuff all the time. Right? It could be 3 in the morning one day, and I go, I got to figure this one out because I just can't sleep anymore. So maybe it starts to give us bad habits. I don't know. We need to take control. We need to not only empower our users, but take control. That's kind of a little bit of an oxymoron if you think about it. I want to give you some empowerment, but I got to take control. How does that really work? But we have to do it. We have to figure this out. Last and certainly not least, we got to plan for the future. Whether or not you have cloud services today, whether or not you use kind of a service model in your environment or service-oriented architecture, you probably heard some talks yesterday from Ulrich Homan. He had a really good session on that where he talked a lot about how applications will move into that more service and workload type situation. If you're not there yet, it's coming, right? I'm one of those guys who I don't say never and this will be that way forever because we've been told history says that's not the case. So we got to plan for the future. What can we do now to plan for that future? Bottom line is really it's about incorporating identity into your environment so you can transform your business. I have kind of a saying that without identity, what good are all those fancy applications and little solutions that are out there that's making the world billions of dollars? Some are really good because it doesn't require identity, sure. But the ones that are meaningful, the ones that are useful, have identity in them, right? How else do we get that great personalized data? How else do we find out that next cool song that we're going to watch or listen to on either iTunes or Zune Marketplace or whatever you guys use, right? There's identity behind it. Identity's everywhere. All right. You guys already know these challenges. I bored you to death with things you already know. We talked a little bit about the importance of identity. Let's get into the role of it, and let's talk more importantly about the four pillars of identity. So the role of identity in an environment, we talked about users and devices. You know, identity is more than just a user account and a logon and a person. It's a device. It's some of the network pieces. It's identities everywhere out there, right? Identity is also within applications and services. You might be saying, well, duh, Heath, how do people get access to it, right? Identity is definitely in applications and services. And identity is what ties these users and their devices to that application and service. So this is kind of a standard environment. This makes sense. This is a little bit about how we are today, right? This is a state of affairs. As we move forward, it's absolutely essential for cloud computing. If you think about it, being in a hybrid scenario isn't really something anybody strives to be. You know, you don't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to have a hybrid environment. You wake up in the morning and say, I got to figure this stuff out. How am I going to get connectivity for my users and my devices, my apps and services, to this CloudX world? And this, honestly, is really the foreseeable future, if you ask me. You know, I'm not going to say we'll never be all cloud-oriented or one way or another, but the hybrid scenario where we have traditional IT connecting to one or many cloud environments or many cloud environments connecting to many others is really the short long term, we'll call it, if that's fair to say. But identity is what's going to get you there. And as I said earlier, identity is always the afterthought. What do I do with it? How do I connect these environments? So now let's talk a little bit about how we view identity. So I have a colleague of mine and I, we've been working on the four pillars of identity for some time. We actually briefed on it a couple years ago at an external conference. And the ultimate form of flattery is when somebody else takes what you put together and integrates it into theirs. So I was reading some of the analyst reports, and they had four pillars as well, ironically matching to ours with respect of that last pillar. But let's talk about these pillars. So in the four pillars, you have administration, authentication, authorization, and what we call audit. There certainly could be an argument for the last pillar to be called more than just audit, more of analytics. But really, we feel that in the identity space, as you embark on putting together strategy and designs for identity in your environments, if you aren't addressing each one of these pillars, you're missing something. We talked about the challenges. We talked about all those things earlier. And these are the four pillars that cover them. I'm going to dive a little bit into it. But at a high level, when you talk about administration, it's kind of that single view of an identity, right? This is where you take and apply business rules to your identity solution. This is where you get into automation and all those requests and approvals and all those things you talked about. I'll get deeper, but at a high level, we'll keep here. Authentication. What's the user's sign-on experience? Is it trusted source or not? Where's it coming from? Is it standard and secure, and does it use these standard and secure protocols? Whatever those are, right? And what are the levels of assurance? Authorization talks about how and where are we able to handle these authorizations? Can a user access what they're trying to do? It answers that question of, can they access what they're trying to get access to when they're trying to do it? And what can they do with it? And then, of course, the last most important thing with, you know, where does somebody do this? When did it happen? And what is the governance model around that? So let's talk about these pillars in a little bit more depth. I'm going to start with administration. This is Heath's attempt to metricize this environment, so hopefully it's aesthetically pleasing. So when we think about administration, who's heard the term identity management? Come on, now. Two hands. I love it. Identity management, bang, head, here. Yes. So we went from identity and access management to identity management. I would say we're probably back to identity and access management. The administration pillar is where you talk about things like provisioning, deprovisioning. How is that handled? Is it manual? Is it automated? What are the processes to have identity stay updated in your environment? How do those happen? Synchronization, right? How does that flow throughout the atmosphere? These are things you guys are used to, right? This is identity management, IDM. Group management. I throw it group management. I kind of feel like that's more like entitlement management, but we're Microsoft. We have groups. It's called group management for the most part in today's world. If you guys have seen some of the new things in Active Directory with the centralized access policy services, you see that's kind of changing a little bit. Kind of, right? But in today's world, with the proliferation of groups, group management. Here we go. Identity proliferation. I got a user account somewhere in HR, so I can access my HR portal. I got an Active Directory user account. If you're Exchange, cool. You got just one account for getting into your email system. Oh, I got an application A through Z. There's 26 more accounts. Oh, my goodness. It goes on and on and on. And what happens when I no longer work here? Well, I had a customer tell me about 2 months ago, you know, I said, how do you deprovision accounts in your environment? How do you get rid of those stale accounts? And you know how they found out? When they got invited to the happy hour. If they got invited to the happy hour for that person, they knew they were terminated, somebody went in and said, delete. Said, oh, that person probably had access to this, that. I got to send an email. That's wonderful. It's better than nothing. But what happened to the other 17 systems that person had access to that somehow is actually on the extranet or somewhere out in the wild and they can still get access into it? Now, I think most of us are honest people, and I don't think anything would happen from that, but being a realist in technology, we know these things happen. We know that's a bad thing. What's the interface look like for users? Self-service, right? That's the big thing. I want to offload the work that some of my service desk folks do today onto the user for some things, right? Maybe one of those things is, hey, I want to give them the ability to self-service their password. If they forgot it, let's throw up a few challenge and response questions, let them answer it, good to go. Maybe we're getting a little more sophisticated and we want to implement some group management. Hey, I want to join this group because I need access to that really cool stuff, and someone, whoever owns that group, will approve it. All of these things are administration. So as I said, whether you're doing these things manually or you have a full-fledged automated environment where these things happen on demand, this is the administration pillar. So as you formulate an identity strategy, you need to think about this pillar and what it means for you. Now, the cool thing is I have an eye chart here that I'll show you in a little bit that talks about some things that you can use to help you determine that strategy. I would say the theme of this particular pillar is one that's been around for probably, 13 years now. I think 98, 99 was probably when it started getting popular, was the whole provisioning, deprovisioning, and it's gotten a little bit better since then. But the same theme applies, is when someone's hired, get them access. When someone's fired, don't. So that's our traditional sense. What do we do for those external folks, those business partners, those users out in the wild that want to get access into an environment? How do they do it today, right? We stand up identities in probably that Active Directory, that DMZ Active Directory. We say so-and-so from that company happens to be the administrator, and if something comes in, there might be a phone call exchange between them and they can get access, right? Now, I know there's more ways to do it than that, but that's kind of a standard way to do it. That's all things that need to be thought about. We need to expand our thinking outside of our traditional enterprise, which is really where administration has sat now for a long time. How do we empower our external entities to get access without having to make phone calls? Remember back to empowering users, getting things onboarded rapidly and securely with secure standards in place. Authentication, my favorite topic. So authentication is, again, it's about, are you who you say you are? And have you given me a level of assurance that I can appreciate? But authentication is more in today's world, right? Who has heard of that erroneous term, single sign-on? Who has true single sign-on? Once. You had one server and one account, and once, right? So what I would say is SSO, folks, SSO is not a product. Now, there are folks out there who will tell you, Heath is crazy, we have products. Sure, there are products to help simplify the sign-on experience. So I would say it's SSO if you replace the single, it's simplified. But here's the thing, right? SSO is not that product. It is the result of a well-architected solution. That's how you achieve SSO. The reality is what we have today is a lot of disjoint sign-on experience, or probably more what we call reduced sign-on. So reduced sign-on is a little bit more popular. We talked a little bit about identity proliferation, right? We got identities everywhere. And as we get a little bit more mature, we have some synchronization to keep them updated, but we have something in place called password synchronization, which works really, really well, as long as you're synchronizing passwords among systems that have mutually agreeable password constraints, right? Otherwise, what happens? You go, well, we got to sync out to this blah system, and we got to change our Active Directory policy because they don't understand complexity and a length over 8 characters. That's a trouble. So when we talk about authentication, we talk about the user's authentication experience. Is it flexible? How does that work? Is it disjoint, meaning I have multiple IDs and multiple passwords? Is it reduced? Same user account, but I really am technically logging in multiple times? Or is it truly single, where I log in once and use many? Are these coming from a supported source? Is it your central Active Directory environment? Are you using some federated solution? Where is authentication happening from? My favorite thing that I hear is, so what are you using for authentication? What does that application use to authenticate to Active Directory? Well, it's using LDAP authentication. I say, really? LDAP, Lightweight Directory Access Protocol. How's that authentication? Well, it's doing an authentication. So let's talk about that. Well, what it's really doing is it's going in and it's querying via LDAP Active Directory for a user account and maybe an attribute value. And if those happen to match what it thinks it really should, you have access. That's authentication. We do it over SSL, so we're all good. That's not really authentication, right? Authentication is about getting a secure token to a service that says you have been authenticated from a trusted source. We like to muddle it a little bit in Microsoft, especially with Active Directory, where we kind of lump authentication and our next topic, authorization, together, where you log in, you get access to something, it's all kind of nebulous, happens behind the scenes, it's authentication, authorization. But they are truly two separate topics. So when we talk about authentication, we're really talking about authenticating from a trusted source in a secure manner, and it means that standard in which you can use or which you actually look at within your environment as a standard. Security protocols, right? We know Kerberos. We know Kerberos well, right? Kerberos is good stuff. We've got this new thing on the block that some of us are saying it's not so new, but it's newer for some, is SAML. How do we get that SAML token over to the application? In what format is it coming through, and how's that working, and what claims do you have, and all this good stuff? SAML is a big one. I would say those are probably your big ones out there, and there are a lot of others, but what's your protocol behind it? And level of assurance is really that last thing. Has anybody heard the term level of assurance? We have a couple. Okay, we'll talk a little about level of assurance. So NIST, which is the National Institute for Standards and Technology, it's a U.S.-based government type institute. If you've ever read publication 800-63-1, or if you haven't, I would recommend going out there. If you do a search, NIST 800-63-1, it's a special publication out there that was actually recently updated. It's kind of cool. Some folks will say, I need to be NIST 800-63-1 compliant. You'll kind of laugh because when you read it, you remember me saying, hey, what happens when we set down that governance and compliance book and it says you must have secure communications? And you go, okay, cool, what's that mean to me? Well, if you've seen City Slickers, it's this one thing, right? You got to figure that out for yourself. This is a little bit more in depth than that, but it does give you some guidance in terms of what that is. So if we think about level of assurance today, there are four levels. I want to make sure I get them right, so I actually have notes for you. We have level one, which is really no identity proofing whatsoever. This is kind of where you get into that almost anonymous concept. You get into level two, where you're talking about what you guys use today, which is that single user ID and password. You know, I challenged with a password. By virtue of knowing this secret password, I have access to that, and that's good. Most things require just level one type assurance. We get into the level two. That's where you get into that sort of, level three. I'm going off the numbers here. One, two, three. Level three is where you get into multi-factor authentication, whether that be, you know, some tokens that you have or biometrics or some form of a multi-factor device, one-touch password or OTP. And then you get into really that level four, which is kind of that deepest level of assurance, which is where you have in-person identity proofing. So I'm sure probably many of you haven't gone to a government facility, but, you know, if you have, this happens a lot with smart cards, I would say, where if you have a smart card, you got to go to a security office. They say, let me see your picture ID, government-issued photo ID. Yes, you are who you say you are, or you paid someone really ugly to stand in for you. I'll give you your smart card that has your token. You are who you say you are. This is kind of more the extreme sense. And there are different types of encryption methodologies that go behind this for how's that token encrypted, how is it transmitted over the wire. I would welcome you guys to read the publication. It is a bit of a lengthy read, but I will tell you it's a really interesting form of education for how at least one body looks at how you provide authentication services within your environment. So I would say today in most environments you see a lot of different authentication solutions. Predominantly, and what I typically talk to customers about is, hey, what do you use as your centralized authentication source? Do you have one? No, well, you log into PeopleSoft over here, and they log into their workstation through Active Directory. And so when we get a little bit more mature in our environment, we talk about centralizing that and trying to make that an enforced type standard. Or better yet, what you guys are probably more familiar with and excited about, right, those architecture principles. When you're evaluating services and solutions, does it conform to some of those principles? And perhaps one of those principles is using a centralized Active Directory environment, and or, because we're preparing for the future, does it also provide some SAML capabilities? So authentication is big. And as I said, we in Microsoft like to munge it together a little bit with authorization. So what is authorization, right? Can I have access to what I'm trying to access at the time? Well, let me throw some acronyms at you. We talked about RBAC. Have you heard about PBAC or ABAC or any of these other BACs? There's a new RBAC, by the way. I don't know if it's RBAC, I guess. Yeah, I guess it is. So we talk about role-based access control, which is nebulous. Attribute-based access control is probably a little bit easier. If you've been to the new Active Directory stuff, talking about the central access policy service, you get into the whole, hey, if an attribute value matches this and this condition, they have some sort of access to this resource. That's basically, in a nutshell, attribute-based access control. Policy-based access control is where you have, and this is actually something that a lot of our competitors do. So if you look at the policy-based access control, you'll have some policy service, very similar to what we're doing with Active Directory and that centralized policy service. You have something out there where you set some enterprise policies for what type of access can happen for applications in your environment. You might grant some control to the application owner to extend those policies. Maybe they can't really change the core enterprise policy, but they could extend it. And then when users have authenticated and attempt to access a resource, the application will have to query a shim installed on the server that will go out to the centralized policy service get the information about who you are and what kind of access do you have, transmit it back to the application, hopefully in a form the application will understand. Otherwise, the shim will translate it, and it will grant you access based upon what was given. Now, it might say, Heath is in Orlando, Florida, and he just purchased a Mickey Mouse t-shirt for his kids. But all of a sudden, 2 minutes later, he was buying beer over in Germany at this one restaurant. There's something funky with that, right? That's basically policy-based access control, and you see it today within your banking system, right? You ever get that phone call that says, are you really in Orlando or are you over in Germany? Where are you at? Did you buy this? That's an example of policy-based access control. From an application perspective, that one's a little bit difficult because it does require either to understand some form of industry, and I hesitate to use the term standard. It's probably highly used industry protocol or solution when you get into things like XACML, which is an extensible access control markup language, or there's a few others that I've heard of out there as well. Can that application take that metadata and translate it into access? So a lot on policy-based access control. This is actually becoming a very, very popular situation out there. But I think the key behind policy-based access control is that it uses some form of a shim. So from an application development standpoint, not only do you need to learn how to consume the identity service, maybe it's better than before, but now you have to figure out how are you going to take this thing that it's giving you and translate it into access, which likely is proprietary to that application. So policy-based access control is interesting and it's up and coming. We'll see where it goes. Industry standards, I would say, haven't truly been set. Industry use is leaning towards things like XACML. And then you get kind of down into the whole concept of claims-based access, right? So this really is paired within a federated model. And it's mostly on the authentication stance. But where federation bleeds into authorization is really when it comes to the claims that you're posing to the application. So as you were logging in and building your token, you had some additional information sent in that token about you, maybe your role, maybe something else. That gets transferred over to the application, and the application makes a decision. Now, in Microsoft, what we look towards in terms of authorization, and I speak about authorization outside of the concept of groups. Let's talk about it at an application layer. You know, we really do go ahead for authentication. Federation, cool. If you want to offload it, that's great. All you've done is offloaded authentication. Maybe you get some information. But we leave the authorization decision up to the application, and we don't force you to use necessarily a third-party shim to say, go query this thing over here, maybe get some proprietary additional token that hopefully you know how to use, and you can take that out. What we do is we leave that up to the application. So that's really when we get into the claims discussion about passing the information it needs to determine what level of access it has. So that was pretty deep on authorization. If I could bubble it up to a higher level, there's really two different types of authorization. There's coarse-grained authorization, and there's fine-grained authorization. What's the difference between the two? Coarse-grain, think about it as red light, green light. Can I see the resource or can I not? Have I presented enough information that says, hey, this application is there for me to see, I can launch it? What happens when I launch it and what access I have once I do that is where we get down into fine-grain access control or how that authorization works in the fine-grain world. Audit. The most commonly overlooked pillar in every identity solution is audit. Let's talk about it, right? You guys know this. Walk with me on this journey. So we have log data everywhere. We got it in web service logs. We have it in event logs. We have it in custom logs. We have it on this server in 70 different places. We've got logs coming out our bazoos, right? All the way out of here, out of our ears. Log information is everywhere. How easy is it to harvest that data? It's tough. And the level of data that you have in those logs could be erroneous, right? It could be deep, it could be nothing, it could be somebody accessed this Or better yet, it could be some hexadecimal code error that you don't even have a clue about, and the developer is no longer there, so who can ask that person, right? So this is the pillar that I will tell you is most commonly overlooked. What is auditing really when we start to get into the done right situation, right? Really done right is the ability to talk about who had access to what, when did they had access, what did they do when they accessed it, and what happened after the fact, or how did that access change? This kind of gets into the concept, at least on the identity side, from attestation. Has anybody heard the term attestation? A couple folks, right? So when did you get access? Who approved that access? Those are types of things that you can capture as you're designing your administration plan, right? How am I going to capture that data? I know it's going to be there, whatever solution you use. How can I roll that up into something meaningful? And that's really what it's about. But the challenge is we have data everywhere on logs, and we really need to figure out how we can take all that data into a centralized place so we can actually go ahead and report and do something meaningful with it. So not only is it the reporting concept, meaningful reporting, but there's alerting. What happens if someone accesses something that they shouldn't? Do you get notified? Maybe. I've done some pretty neat things with our System Center product where we can do some alerting and notification on that topic where, you know, somebody accesses something that doesn't meet a preset standard. Not only can it alert you on that to say, hey, security, there's been something happened. This system's not compliant, but then also enforce that compliant state. It's a little bit easier when you're talking about who has administrative access to servers, right? Developers, how many developers have administrative access to production servers? Are you guys the developers? You're like, shh, don't say anything, Heath, don't say anything, right? We know it happens, right? It's in our environment, get it. It's a good thing in many different cases. Certainly as we get into an agile situation, it might almost be required. But if we think about the whole concept of things like ITIL and problem management, it doesn't truly facilitate that situation. So we need the ability to have a standard and then have our auditing solution be able to enforce it and say, hey, this happened, there's an alert, this person shouldn't have access to that, it happened, and then I have fixed it. Here's where we get into governance methods, right? Everybody really just wants to take that one little policy module and say, I want to apply the PCI module to this server. Some folks have those things. Now, for legality reasons, we get back to that discussion of the PCI book isn't very deep in terms of what exactly you need to do. So, friends, Mr. Customer, how do you do it in your environment? We'll make sure that happens for you. But these are things you need to think about when you do your reporting, is what types of things do I need to report on to be, in that case, PCI compliant or HIPAA or whatever the case might be. Collection of data. I already talked about this log data is everywhere. How are you going to collect that? Certainly, we have some services that will help you collect information from those fancy event logs. Hopefully, it's meaningful data that you can use and then produce into these great meaningful reports. It can happen. It sounds like I'm being sarcastic or facetious. It can actually happen. It is tough. I will tell you that it's tough. And I will say it's even tougher when you start talking about outside the Microsoft world, because you guys have more than just Microsoft stuff that you have to report on, right? Yeah. If you don't, you probably have SSO while you're at it too, right? If it's all Microsoft, right? Okay. You guys are awake a little bit. That's okay. The fact of the matter is we got stuff everywhere, and one solution to collect that is very tough and challenging. There are some great partner solutions out there. You're always welcome to look at them. System Center has evolved in a way that does a really good job of being able to collect this data, but you do have to put thought into it, okay? So I guess when we close out these four pillars, you get the concept of each of the pillar, right? Hopefully at this point, you can see that as you design an identity solution, and I don't care if it's for application Y or for an enterprise strategy and what you're going to do, you absolutely need to look at each of these four pillars, and you need to figure out what's meaningful for you. So you might be saying, well, that's great, Heath. You gave me a bunch of stuff, tons of acronyms. My head's going to explode. What does this really mean? Let me actually get into some of what's going to help make this really something meaningful for you and how you can actually create your identity strategy. So as we talk a little bit about the identity strategy, I'm going to bring you back to a little known thing called infrastructure optimization, and then I'm going to show you how to do it. So I want to make sure everybody's on an even keel with this. Anybody heard of infrastructure optimization, IO? I'll put two hands up. Cool. You guys are a little bit ahead of the game. So Microsoft took some great information that we had from Gartner. Gartner actually has, I believe, what they call an optimization model, and we also had some MIT has an architecture optimization model. We took a look at these two models, and we've developed really something for ourselves that we can use with our customers. Now, if you want Heath's version of infrastructure optimization, I think it's a really, really useful tool. I think it's often used incorrectly, okay? You know, bad Microsoft sales guys and ourselves, sometimes we use it as a tool to say, you need to be more mature, buy some more stuff. Okay, yeah, I get that. Apologize for that. The real purpose behind this solution is for you to understand where you need to go and how can you add benefits and value to your business. Because technology, we love it, we get paid for it, it's cool, but it's useless if we're not aligning it towards a business goal or priority. Right? From an architecture standpoint, we're all saying the same thing. I tell my colleagues and the folks that work with me, hey, that is cool, but what business issue is it solving? Or how is it empowering that business to make more revenue or whatever the case may be more efficient? And I go, if they say, I don't know, let's talk about something else, right? Okay? You can't walk into your CIO's office and say, I want to do this identity management solution without saying, how is it going to save you money? And I really hope that it's kind of gone past the days of saying, how many pink slips do I get? Because that just breaks my heart. I don't want to hear that stuff anymore. I like to talk about, the good news is this person can now do this, and that's going to make us more agile. So IO helps us do this. What is it? It's a four-tiered model that really helps you guys kind of diagnose where you're at, kind of determine where you want to go, and start to realize what are those savings or efficiencies that you're going to gain as you move up the stack. So it is a bit of a humbling experience as you go through this process of assessing and determining where am I at, because we don't like red. I don't like red. I don't like low scores or anything. You guys are with me on that, right? So it's humbling, but it's important. Because how can we fix the sins of our past if we don't know where we've been? So that's really important about that. I'm going to give you the four models with a very, very brief overview of each level. You've got your basic level, which is really kind of reactive, right? Which you guys are probably already going, I have some basic stuff out there, right? User needs to reset a password, got to answer a phone, I reset a password. It's a reactive situation. Obviously, it gets more extreme than that. You have systems that are complex, they're incompatible, they're expensive to try to even think about meshing together, and what happens in this scenario, from an identity standpoint, we're all identity folks, we start adding on additional identity stores and figuring out how to manage them, and how do we provide sign-on, all that stuff we talked about earlier. It gets difficult at this level, and it's very, very, very expensive, and it's not agile. You move into that standardized world of, okay, things are now a little bit more effective, right? Somewhat. What does that really mean? Well, they're more effective, right? Curly's rule of thumb. What does it mean to you? You know, things are still complex and incompatible. They do run as standalone, but now you've evolved some processes around them. They're not exorbitantly painful. This is kind of sometimes what I like to say, this is what I'm used to, so it doesn't hurt so bad, right? If you've... I don't know, you could probably take all kinds of analogies, but if you've experienced the same amount of pain for a certain amount of time, sooner or later it's going to feel like normal, it's not going to bug you anymore, right? That's kind of standardized a little bit like that, maybe a bit of an unfair analogy, but things are getting a little bit better. As we move into rationalize, all of a sudden we're starting to develop those long-term strategies. It's developed by not only IT, but it's in conjunction with the business. It's driven by the business. Fancy idea. It's driven by business. Complexity is kind of engineered out of it. A little bit of the simplicity is brought back into the process. Things are based off business rules. And really, this is where you get into the most kind of cost-effective infrastructure state. So now we've gotten past the sins of our past. Things have gotten better. And infrastructure now, or our services within IT, are functioning in a little bit more optimized state. Dynamic, everybody says, I want to be dynamic because that looks really cool, right? We're starting to save costs because we're maximizing our business agility. We have a competitive advantage. I'm not a marketing guy, but you follow me on this one, right? Things are automated, they're flexible, they're compatible. I can link it together. Oh, hey, you want to get authentication for that application? Everybody run, the aliens are landing. No, I'm kidding. Zombies. All right, so you really want to get these things connected together? Not a problem, right? You don't have people telling you, I'm going to do this. You say, no problem, I got a service for you. Here's what it'll do. You've got architecture principles in place, and they're followed. That's key, right? You have architecture principles. Are they followed? Hopefully, getting there, right? Dynamic is an interesting state. Before I get on to this next slide, I want to talk about this model and identity. If anybody's seen our slides of the past, much like this is a four-tiered approach. You're either here, or you're either there, and you're there, or you want to be there, wherever the case is. It was very, very siloed. And what we found when we think about identity, and we think about those four pillars, is that putting yourself into an individual silo isn't really appropriate. Because you may not need to be dynamic to provide a particular level of service in your environment. Standardized might be okay. Rationalized may be a little better. But why force you to being one versus the other when the reality is you can be in many places? So get ready for the eye chart. I know it's small. I'm not going to read through this. It is colorful. Okay? The important part about this slide, first of all, it's in the deck and you can use it. It is a tool that I want you to use for assessing. We'll talk about that. But what I use is I use this matrix to find out where people are with each of those pillars. And within those pillars, that very next thing where you see provisioning, deprovisioning, and all those pieces, those are capabilities. What capability do you need? If you're implementing a particular solution, do you really need to have, dynamic attribute-based owner-managing groups with approvals? Maybe not. Maybe it's okay to have, some managed by the help desk or whatever. Maybe it's okay to just have some of that managed by an owner. These things, we have different models that we're going to start working on that will kind of tell you where we think you should be across the maturity matrix for a particular solution, whether it's something as simple as a cost savings model or something more complex like I need to provide access to external entities or things like that. But I think if you look at this, you can kind of start to see where you might fit with particular capabilities. Now, I don't have the fancy transition of what does this look like from an exercise standpoint, but what I literally do is I talk to my customers and I'll go through down this list. So what do you have today? Okay, where are identities housed? Well, they're in this system and that system and this system and that system, and they're all over the place. So basically what I'm hearing is you don't have an enterprise identity store. I didn't say source of authority. I said store. Okay? Okay. Fact is, we're a little bit basic. It's okay. We have room for growth. Oh, you have 21 Active Directory for us. Okay. Maybe there's a business reason. So why? Let's talk about that. Here's how this gets useful. If you start to see where you're at, and you start to think about where you want to be, you can start to see what you need to do to get there. So if I were using this, and I've done this before, I'll draw little squares around where they're at, draw little squares around where they want to go, and show how that highlights and shifts. I didn't want to bore you to death with that. But this is how we see maturity when it comes to identity. And as I said, it's important to say You can aspire to be all dynamic, but I will challenge you, do you really need to be dynamic for everything? And I'm guessing the answer is no, Heath, I do not. So when you build your strategy, this is what we do, and I'm going to talk about how we do it in a second. Very first and foremost, you want to assess. You want to understand the business priorities. I can't tell you the number of times I've said, hey, Heath, can you review this architecture for me? And I spend an hour listening to cool slides about this, that, and the other, and the technology is awesome, but what's it serving? Nothing. Well, what's the point, right? So understand your priorities. Then be honest. Assess yourself. Take that chart I gave you. Assess yourself. Where are you at today? Be honest, though, right? We don't want to be untruthful in this exercise. Then you can start to determine what's that desired state. Where do I need to go? These guys are going to miss out on some cool stuff at the end, but that's okay. Once you have this information, you can use it to build a plan. Sounds crazy. Build a plan. You can say, I don't have an enterprise store. I'm starting to do some cloud-based application access, so I'm not really using industry standard protocols. I need to have that. So you can start to figure out what's that roadmap going to look like. Now, roadmap, I look at in terms of activities and phases of things you need to accomplish to get to that end state. Time and how to do that is entirely up to you and how fast you can move. And, you know, obviously, are we helping you? No, I'm just kidding. But how are you able to get there? Once that plan's in place, this is not rocket science, right? Execute on the plan. Innovate. Okay. Let's talk about what we have for solutions and how we leverage this model to provide a solution for you. I got a couple that I wanted to call out. One's the Dynamic Identity Framework. The other one is an Access Enablement Gateway and Identity Service. Let's talk a little bit about the Dynamic Identity Framework. So DIF, which is kind of a bad acronym, right? DIF actually has three components to it. So we've got just this generalized one, which you guys have already done phase one workshop, right? You've heard Heath talk about the four pillars of identity. You guys are super smart now. You know, move forward and preach on to others. That's really what this is about. But, it, you know, we certainly do get a little more in depth. We can talk about how Microsoft products achieve those particular values. But, you know, and I do have the technologies under there that provide some services that we can talk about in terms of that. The second piece is really... my clicker's not working. There we go. Two-week assessment and roadmap. So that's where we take that maturity model and we review your environment. We go through and understand what your priorities are, where you're at, and you actually get a report out of this. Now, I will tell you, the first couple of reports that I wrote, I'm going, oh, man, this isn't good. How am I going to deliver this message? This doesn't sound good, but it's honest, and CIOs appreciate that. Right? My job isn't to sit here and make everything feel warm and fuzzy. I love doing that, but I also need to be honest with you so we can start making progress. We take care of that. We assess what you're doing in the environment, learn where you're going, and we provide you a really nice roadmap as to how you can get there. Now, the cool thing is once we get to the roadmap, we have all kinds of identity solutions that we can provide that services, Microsoft Services, has put together based on our recommended practices, our experiences in doing these things with folks like yourselves around the world into repeatable deliveries. The goal behind that is it's not that you guys can't do it yourself. It's how can we help you get there faster, right? I've got a few of them on there. I said I'm going to call out a couple of them. But really, we get into a couple things that can come out of that. Things like we have some enterprise federation offerings. We have some of those identity management offerings to cover the administration pillar. And then we have not only this, but we have this next piece that I'm going to show you, which I think you guys will really like. Let me tell you a little bit about the Access Enablement Gateway and Identity Service. We actually used to call it something else, but we got crabbed at because it was too close to a product name, so we've changed it. So the Access Enablement Gateway and Identity Service is a solution that we've put together based on customer demand, and it's really an interesting and flexible solution. But when you think about scenarios it covers things like business to consumer, business to business, good old B2B, You know, I've had a cover citizen to government. Really, it's about how can I get access to some of my line of business applications or my consumer applications for folks that are outside my organization. When you think about things like that, you might think about business to business. How do I have organizational delegation? How do I have that self-service ability so that people can actually register for access to the application and I can track it? We talked about how we do it today, right? We have some folks who have DMZ. But how about we had a better scenario where I trust where your authentication's coming from, but all I've done is offloaded authentication. I need to make authorization decisions. What does that mean? I have to capture profile data. I might have some registration information I need from that user. Now, to an end user, it may appear as though they're registering for an account. The reality is they might be logging in using their Windows Live ID, Facebook, Google, Yahoo, whatever the case might be. Might be another party. Maybe it's one that you've stood up for them. I've got some states who have some state-wise kind of identity systems they've stood up. I wouldn't call it eGov. I would just call it IDs that they manage. But how do I leverage these things into an application and still get data to say I can make authorization decisions? So we have the registration components behind that. What happens when you register? Let's go back to the business-to-business scenario. I have somebody in Contoso that says I can go ahead and access an application. I'm the business owner, right, or administrator. You know, I'm the person that holds the keys that says you can get in. You need access to this service. Maybe you need to check inventory or whatever the case is. You go out to that URL that I provided you. You go to log in. The first thing you do is say, oh, I'm going to log in with my Contoso account. Cool. Goes in. You might have to fill out some registration data if it's your first time and if you require it, of course. That registration data then is used to make authorization decisions. It also, one of the authorization decisions it might make is, does this person have access to a particular application? Can use workflow to email that organization admin. That org admin can approve it. Boom, they get access in. So this is a kind of a complex solution if you think about just in the B2B terms of how do you give access to users outside your organization without having to manage the cost of owning that security principle, handling password resets, and how do you really just kind of offload some of that capabilities while empowering them to do what they need in a secure manner. This solution provides that. I talked about some of the other examples, but I think it's important to kind of talk about, you know, really it's about getting this brought together with a broader audience. How can I expand the traditional boundaries of what people are accessing today and quit managing these stinking user accounts? It costs a lot of money. I didn't want to leave you guys without an architectural reference. What kind of fun would that be? So this is Heath's attempt at Metro architecture. It's pretty cool. So we talked a kind of high level about what the Access Enablement Gateway and Identity Service Solution provides. As I said, you've got some users that are outside somewhere. They come through a particular gateway. Typically, a concept of this is I am publishing an application. You guys publish applications, right? Reverse proxy type stuff. Yeah? No? Maybe? Thinking about it? So I've got some form of a gateway that provides these reverse proxy services that has my application sitting out there. User's going to access that. Now, behind the gateway, you may have a series of published applications. Some of those applications are the whole identity management app side of it. So in your particular solution, you may need to have a managed account. Maybe there just happens to be an application that you haven't thought about changing that does require a Kerberos token versus something like SAML or something of that nature, and you want to do some transformation to go ahead and take that incoming authentication information and transform it on behalf of the user into a Kerberos ticket. Maybe you need that managed identity. This particular solution is better when you're using that federated experience. It works very well for both. But I think where you're heading is if you can get into that federated experience where your application accepts SAML, then you're really just talking about some trusts that are set up in that federated environment. But from a solution perspective, I talked a little bit about that registration experience. Hey, a little more self-service. How about we let the user update some of their own information? Maybe for some crazy reason I require, I don't know, a telephone number or something of that nature. Really, this can kind of go as far as you want it to in terms of what you require. We have had some customers require some PII-related data, which I will upfront tell you that requires some significant security development lifecycle planning to make sure that you're doing it properly. But if you aren't, that's cool too. I hope you're not. But basically, you can use this data to do verification. So think about a citizen going into a Department of Labor application, or for that matter, how about that tax app for some reason, right? You got to get into a state tax app. How does the state know who you are? Well, it needs to validate a Social Security number, so I can maybe plug that in. Not store it anywhere, but maybe you plug that in, do the validation. And maybe what that validation does, by the way, here comes the aliens again. Maybe what that validation does, it says you get an actual coarse grain authorization to that application. So you can really extend on it. The real crux of it is the solution itself provides you that managed experience for the user to do org delegation as necessary, to have registration so you can capture profile data, so you can make authorization decisions. Because who in this room trusts making authorization decisions off someone else's data? I would put my hand about here, right? Maybe, depending on that trusted source. Bottom line is, you've offloaded authentication. They might have given you some claims, but you might still want to own that authorization data. So you might be sitting there thinking, well, wait a minute, Heath, you just said we don't want to necessarily manage these security principles. We want to save our costs. This solution's going to do that for me, but now I got to manage identity data? Wow, that's not saving me anything. Well, it does save you in the terms of you don't have open security principles and things of that nature, but ultimately you need information to make your own decisions. That's what the registration process is for. Partners, kind of easy to explain. That's that business-to-business scenario. This could be business-to-consumer. What if I told you I'm not logging in with a Contoso account and I said, I want to provide a solution to customers. I don't want to manage your identity. I'm cool with using this social identity provider. You guys are probably looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm agreeing with some of them, right? You know, maybe, maybe not. Fact of the matter is, they're a reality. They're here to say it. There's something we can use in our toolbox to make decisions. But what if I just said, I'm going to go ahead and let them use a Facebook ID? It's common. There's consent behind it. I don't trust what Facebook does with my identity, maybe, but all I'm really saying is they've authenticated and they are who they say they are. I might have some enforcements behind that. You can start to reach a broader audience with your applications if you require authentication. This solution will provide that for you. Now, behind the scenes, you get into that whole service and workflow. Did that organization admin need to get notification to say, hey, Heath Aubin's accessing this inventory application? Is that cool? Yes. Got the workflow behind it. You know, when you create that account or when you create that profile, access to a system, what is our experience today? We register for an account. We get an email says, click on this URL to validate you are who you say you are. You click on the URL, and you go, oh, thank you for logging in. Now you're welcome to use our services. Solution provides that similar experience as well for the user, if that's something you desire. We also add into this solution the concept of a coarse-grained authorization store, right? So when you think about that profile data, this is a place where we can go in and get additional attribute or identity information to make a decision on authorization. Now, applications have them today. That's why I have the application databases there. Applications will have that. You might use a product, for example, a Unified Access Gateway or UAG as your gateway. It may need to leverage information out of that store to say, hey, I'll show that application as something that's visible to the user. Or maybe in a particular case, you'll redirect them to it just based on the URL they use from URL filtering, whatever the case might be. We have that ability to have this store so you can have a place to make those decisions. At the end of the day, what comes in the solution? Everything where there's a little checkbox comes in this particular solution. Published apps, that's something you guys have already. Application-specific identity stores, that's something you guys have originally. But I will tell you, this solution's taken off, and it does have many forms. I just talked through in a particular example today. I'd be happy to take it offline with what are the additional possibilities. But the four pillars have to go into concept with this as well, right? We still have to think about what are we going to do for auditing? How do we need to do those things? So, you know, in kind of closing, we talked about some of the industry trends. I acronym inundated you like crazy. We certainly talked about some of those key challenges. So that we covered. We talked about the four pillars of identity and how they'll be useful in creating your strategic direction. Your strategic direction. Remember, when you leave here, these applications are no good without an identity. And we talked a little bit about Microsoft Services kind of rush at the end and what we provide. I got a few sessions out there. You're welcome to check these out. If a lot of them are going to be on demand or are probably already there, please feel free to leverage this list for your own use. These are things I personally recommend. They just weren't showing up on the list by someone else. And of course, please, please, please complete your evaluation. I appreciate being here talking to you. I want to hear your feedback. We continually evolve this. We want to make sure we can help you. Hopefully you have some good architectural principles with identities moving forward. And I really hope you enjoy the rest of Tech Ready. Thank you, everybody.